Hey, everybody, I've got my sparkly jacket on because it's time for us to put the shine on our show sponsors. This episode is sponsored by DRN because, look, running a car wash business is tough. You can have empty lanes and missed opportunities, but what if you could capture passing vehicle plates and turn them into customer profiles? Enter Driven Insights by DRN. It's a revolutionary LPR marketing technology with exclusive license plate recognition data. This platform automatically identifies potential customers, provides names, addresses, phone numbers, emails, and store visit insights. Today, you can elevate your car wash business with Driven Insights and turn every passing vehicle into a customer. Contact DRN for a transformational experience at drndata.com.
Welcome to Car Wash, the podcast, your source for real stories and real business insights from the experts, both in and out of the car wash industry. So put it in neutral, feet off the brakes, and take your hands off the steering wheel. Here is your guide on this journey, Matt DeWolf.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Car Wash, the podcast. Friends, this is the podcast, as always, that makes you a better car washer and hopefully at least a slightly better human being. Today, we're diving in on both of those topics for you. Every once in a while, we're going to focus on one more than the other. But this is really all about a piece of your business that is crucial, and that is your people. We talk about it a lot. It's one of my favorite areas to get into. And so today, we're going to talk about a whole lot of great stuff, but we're going to focus on making better bosses and getting into creating those destination workplaces. So what the heck does that mean? Well, it's all around how can you in today's market find and retain and motivate those top caliber people for your organization so you can stay differentiated and you can be the best wash on the block. So to join me and do that, because you all don't want to hear me pontificate, is Joe Mull. Joe is an author of three books, and his latest is called Employalty, which is the exact topic that we're going to talk about today. Joe, welcome.
Matt, thank you for having me today, man. I'm so excited to be here.
This is a phenomenal topic, especially for the group that is listening to this podcast, because we struggle every day, like lots of businesses do, with how do we find great people? Mm-hmm. And then once we find them, how do we keep them? And then while we have them, how do we promote them in ways that are meaningful for them and give them that really good employee experience? So I'm super excited for the conversation. Can you just maybe start off with a little bit of kind of a primer on what you're seeing in the labor market today and why some of this stuff matters?
100%. And, you know, you're spot on. I think it feels complicated and difficult for people who lead other people in the workplace, really in any industry. But for the folks who are listening to this, who've got frontline workers who are out there in retail environments, it seems even tougher than ever before for them. What we know about what's happening in the labor market right now and for the last few years is that almost all decisions about employment are being driven by quality of life factors. So when I speak at events or when I do training with organizations, I will ask the people in the room, how many of you know someone who has changed jobs in the past year or two? And nearly every hand in the room goes up. And the follow-up question I ask is, well, why are people switching? Tell me about the people in your life. And you get a whole lot of different answers back. You'll say people are changing for better pay or a better commute or a less toxic workplace or a better boss or more opportunities to get promoted and do different kinds of things. But across the board, whether you get 10, 20, or 30 different answers, they all roll up to this bigger idea of better quality of life. And the reason that's happening is because going back a couple of decades here, especially in the United States, we have slowly but more aggressively continued to overwork, burnout, and underpay employees across industries. So there's a massive recalibration taking place right now around how work fits into people's lives. And a lot of people are rejecting jobs and employers who create suffering for them outside of work.
That's a really strong phrase, but I love the use of it, creating suffering, right? I mean, like you spend so much of your time at work and with the people who are there that it sure would be nice if they weren't making you suffer, right?
Right. And for some people, that suffering is economic, right? I like my employer. I like the people I work with, but I'm just not making enough to get by. And so I maybe do have to go across the street for a dollar or two more an hour because, hey, my kid needs braces, right? That's a very particular kind of suffering that people are avoiding. But for some other folks, it really is about, well, I want opportunities to advance, or I don't like that I can't make my kids' soccer games on the weekend because of the schedule or the workload. So that suffering shows itself in a lot of different ways. But it all comes back to what people are rolling away from.
Are there maybe a couple of maybe primary pain points that we should be focusing on as we think about, you know, how do we make sure that people want to come work for us and want to stay here?
Well, the number one most requested workplace benefit in the world right now is flexibility. And that is across every developed nation on earth, and that is across every industry category. And that could be really tough for owners and leaders in retail environments to hear, because you think, I need to staff at a certain level. I need to have a certain number of bodies in place to execute. But flexibility doesn't just mean working from home, which is what a lot of people equate it to. Flexibility is simply about having some influence over where, when, or how I work. So yeah, you might need a certain number of people and you might need them to work a certain kind of schedule, but any place where you can give them some input on the days of the week they work, or the length of their shift, or the location they work in, or how often they work, or when and how they get to use their time off, or certain flexibility around the kinds of benefits they can opt into. More influence allows people to feel like they have more control. And it turns out that's a kind of psychological building block for commitment at work.
Well, and when you think about that too, right, in these retail environments, it's like, well, you might need to think bigger in terms of what does your total bench look like, right? It may not be that you're only staffing 20. You might want to staff 40 to be able to provide those kinds of opportunities. But at the end of the day, that's still going to be a heck of a lot cheaper than turning over 15 of your 20 and hiring and doing it again and doing it again and doing it again. So
even just and you just described one kind of innovation that a business owner or a manager can deploy in order to come up with new solutions. I do a lot of work in the healthcare sector too, and the number of doctor's offices who struggle to find medical assistants, for example, or front desk workers, right, people who are checking in and answering the phone, and the number of folks who have figured out, wow, I can attract a better pool of candidate if I go from saying this is a 40-hour week job to saying it's a 36-hour week job, and creating some flexibility around the schedule, all of a sudden I've got a whole bunch of like moms and grandmas who want these 36-hour a week front desk roles because we can stitch them together in such a way that we have complete coverage, but most of the time they're all able to get their kids or grandkids off the school bus when they need to.
Yeah. Yeah. And that at the end of the day means that they as employees are showing up happier in your place of business. That means they're better with the customers, and then they're going home and they're going to refer to friends, right? I mean, they're going to bring people along with them.
Yep. And this is just one of those dynamics that's in place that we know. We evaluated more than 200 studies and articles on why people quit a job, take a new job, or decide to stay long-term with an employer. And what we discovered was that there are three sets of employee experiences that together form a kind of psychological scorecard that every employee in every job in every company on earth is walking around with. And so what we tell folks is, quite simply, commitment and retention appear when employees are in their ideal job doing meaningful work for a great boss. These are three buckets of experiences. And you know, we can deconstruct those a little bit more if you want to, Matt. But that flexibility piece is a part of that ideal job piece, because that job fits into my life like a puzzle piece snapping into place when I do get a certain amount of flexibility.
All right. So for the listener, let's play those back. Ideal job, meaningful work. And what was the last piece?
Great boss.
Great boss.
Ideal job, meaningful work, great boss. If you think about the best job you've ever had and the worst jobs you've ever had, we likely sort into either of those categories based on three questions. How did that job fit into your life? Mm-hmm. Was the work meaningful? And what did you think of your boss? And it turns out that these are the primary ways we not only decide to join an organization or stay with it, but these are the factors that motivate us at work. So ideal job is about things like compensation and workload and flexibility. Does it fit into my life? Meaningful work is about purpose and strengths and belonging, right? It's what I'm doing and who I'm doing it with. And then that great boss factor is really about the person who's responsible for overseeing my work. Do they trust me? Do they coach me? Do they advocate for me? You get these three sets of experiences right, people will join, they will stay, and they will give it all they've got.
So let's come back to this great boss thing, because I think that's a tough one for us to figure out. You know, we can talk a lot about how to make sure that people feel like the work they're doing is meaningful, or that you're flexible with your pay and you're competitive in that space. But this last one, being a great boss, feels harder. Mm-hmm. What are some ways that you kind of coach people through your work on how to be a better boss? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, we know that a person's direct supervisor is the single most influential factor in the employee experience. And the degree to which I believe that my boss cares about me as a human being is the primary driver of whether or not I think I've got a great boss. And so the first sort of global piece of advice is be concerned about the person first, worker second, right? We have to view them as a fully formed human being with a life and needs and wants outside of work. We have to understand what matters most to them, and it has to matter to us too. And along those lines, then we can get into some of the habits and the routines that leaders really at any level need to practice in order to live that for their folks. One of those parts and pieces is coaching. Are we having conversations with our direct reports to mine them for their ideas and their creativity and their insights and pain points and experiences? Are we inviting them to contribute in that kind of a way to the enterprise? You know, people hear the word coaching and you picture somebody standing on a sideline of a football field who's blowing a whistle and shouting encouragement or direction. And that's not what coaching is, right? Coaching is asking open-ended questions to help people sort through what they know, think, feel, and believe to then determine whether they're going to take a next step in a certain kind of way. And coaching, it turns out, is just sort of secret sauce for leadership.
One of the key topics here, I think, is that we forget as leaders that the people we're promoting aren't going to just know how to be a boss. They're not going to know how to take that next level, because most times when we promoted that person, it's because they were really exceptional at the job they were doing at the time.
Yep.
Well, now you're putting them in a new position. It's a different job and you expect to see those same results, but you have to put in some effort, right? Like to your point, you have to coach them in terms of what does it look like and what do you need to do? And how do you make sure that your people will, at the end of the day, remember that you're a great boss and want to stay and want to come back. So what are some things, if I'm just, maybe I'm relatively new to role, what should I be kind of focusing on in terms of how can I be better?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we know is that leaders tend to be more effective when they have time set aside to talk about leadership with other leaders. Gallup has actually done a bunch of really interesting research in this area, and they found that on teams and workplaces with the highest level of engagement, that there were two things in common among the leaders. The first is that those leaders were committed to ongoing professional development, and the second was that they set aside time to connect with other leaders, right? Simply spending time talking about, hey, what's your struggle? Like, what are you struggling with your team or with your staff? Or, yeah, I've got this person who's underperforming and I'm trying to figure out the right way to have that conversation. Or, yeah, we've tried three or four things and now I'm at that place where, like, where do I decide that this person's no longer a fit? You know, those kinds of ongoing conversations are really important for leaders to be able to have. They need a tribe of folks that they can connect with and talk with that can advise them and mentor them. The other thing that I think is really important, Matt, and that we see consistently in the evidence, is that leaders need to engage in meaningful conversations with their direct reports. Now, what constitutes a meaningful conversation? Well, sometimes it's about the work, right? Sometimes it's about that coaching that we just talked about and mining them for their insight and their creativity. And sometimes it's about goal setting, but also sometimes it's just about learning a little something about them as a human being, how they spent their weekend, or, you know, a little bit about their family, knowing a little bit about their story. Those meaningful conversations, one at a time, end up being deposits into the piggy bank of employee engagement that comes later when I start to believe that my boss cares about me as a person and about my career, not just the items on my job description.
Yeah, I think that's super important advice. And I think, one of the things that it could maybe be helpful for somebody who's maybe new in this role or coming up as a manager, is really to be as intentional with the schedule as you would have been with your job previously, right? So set the rigor, like put it on the calendar, set that thing up, get the process in place, because you know this is a very process-driven business. Why not put process into how you're working with your people just to give you some consistency and some rigor so you don't forget? Because as you move up and as things change, it's going to be real easy to fall back and, and forget to do those things that are really, really important to being that better boss as opposed to just being a great employee.
And I love this point that you just made about the intentionality around making sure those conversations happen, because they can be a mix of formal and informal, right? We can set aside once a quarter or once a month or whatever the right cadence is for your business or your team. We can set aside that formal time to sit down with people in the office and say, hey, this is time that I've set aside just for you and I to connect, to talk about what's working for you here, what's not, what really energizes you about your work, what doesn't, how can I support you, right? What are the conditions here that would allow you to thrive, and how can I fight like hell to create those for you? That's the formal conversation. The informal conversations can happen, right, in the building lobby or outside or in the wash bay, if it's appropriate, you know, and talking about, hey, you told me you were taking your kid to look at colleges last weekend. How did that go? Right. And just really making that personal connection. It doesn't always need to be scheduled. In fact, that mix of informal and formal is probably the best way to go.
One other thing that I love is when people take those conversations and give some of that ownership of the conversation to the people that they're managing, right? So not necessarily on the social side and when you're just trying to connect as a human, but having those one-on-one conversations where, hey, this is your one-on-one to own. You have 30 minutes with me and anything's on the table. Like you come, you're prepared, it's your agenda. That way you're kind of building those people into this role before they have even thought that they want to be in that role.
Yep. There was research I saw a couple of years ago that said upwards of 58 to 60% of employees want to control the agenda in a one-to-one sit-down meeting with their boss. So I always advise leaders, let them drive the car, you be the passenger, and talk about what they want to talk, but come to the meeting prepared to drive if they don't know where they want to go.
So we should still have our own steering wheel and brakes.
100%.
Try not to use them. That's funny. Well, this is the part in the program, friends, where I'm going to give you a quick promotion, because this topic is actually, I would not be doing my job as the CMO if I did not talk about our training tool, which is LEAD. LEAD is Car Wash Manager Training. It's a great platform to give you foundational knowledge in terms of how you can be a better boss, this exact topic we're talking about today. So check it out, lead.carwash.org. You can get started with individual courses today. Now, shameless plug over. I want to talk a little bit more about this concept of like development, right? Like what's the next step? So let's say I've got some great people on my team. Manager's moving up. My manager's really intentional about creating those connections with the employees. What's the next step for them? Like what else do they need to be thinking about beyond like, we'll just connect with your people?
For the people who are in those leadership roles?
Yes. Yeah. For those bosses who want to be like, who they want to make that jump from a good boss to a great boss.
Yeah. You know, my experience in working with leaders is that leadership begins with self-awareness. So we need to start to evaluate, you know, what does my communication style look like and how does it impact others? Where might I need to flex that style? How do I like to make decisions? How do I like to take in information? You know, every one of us listening to this, if you've been a manager for more than 10 minutes, you've probably participated in some kind of like leadership assessment tool, right? There are so many tools out there when it comes to looking at differences in style. There are things like strengths finders, there's the MBTI, there's DISC, there's everything that you can think of. And what I love about all of those kinds of tools is that they force us to look inward a little bit at who am I? What's my inherent style? What are the patterns and behaviors that I inherently reach for? And when and where might those work against me? How do I need to flex my style? You know, one of the things that I hear from leaders all the time is, well, I worked for a really bad boss and that told me exactly what not to do. And that's great. And what not to do is going to work terrifically for the people you are supervising who are just like you. But not everybody we lead is just like us. Right. They may have very different styles and belief systems around the kinds of conversations that I should have with my boss. So it really begins with self-awareness. From there, we got to talk about upskilling. because a leader's primary job, as I've said a couple times in this conversation, I think it's creating the conditions at work for people to thrive.
Yeah.
And there are times when that's going to require a pretty pointed feedback conversation, a performance management conversation. And so developing the skills to give feedback, to engage in coaching conversations, to set goals with people, to mediate conflict between two coworkers when they're not able to do it themselves. These are all skills that leaders need to navigate the daily challenges that come with being in charge of other people at work.
I read recently, one of Adam Grant's new books. Mm-hmm. And there's this concept in there that as you get further away from kind of being a beginner, right, the more expertise you get in a subject matter, the harder it is for you to train up someone because you mm-hmm. forget, right? You forget what it's like to be in that position. What have you maybe seen in terms of how, in this modern workforce, how can we set up our organization so that it's not the guy who's been around for 40 years trying to do all of the training and onboarding of the mm-hmm. person who's just moving into this manager position?
Yeah. You know, I think mentoring programs are so important in organizations nowadays, and cross-generational mentoring, right? Where we get yeah. folks maybe high up with higher levels of experience and expertise who are mentoring younger folks coming into the organization based on their experience and expertise in the organization. But also there's reverse mentoring taking place where mm-hmm. those younger workers are essentially coaching the more experienced leaders on, you know, here's what workers from my generation want today. Here's what's important to us. Here's how we communicate. Here's how we take in information so that we're collectively keeping our finger on the pulse of all of the folks that we are going to be working with and interacting with in the workplace. So those kinds of mentorship programs, I think, are critically important. So too is just a core set of leadership values. And this goes back to that self-awareness piece that we talk about. When leaders understand how they want to lead, when they have a clear set of values for the kind of environment I'm trying to create, the kind of expectations I have around how people show up, and they're able to engage humanely with their workforce while being driven and steered by those core values, you end up really tend to find a lot of success as a leader. So there's some work there that needs to be done too on helping leaders really at any level explore those core values and refine them if certain values aren't serving them well as a leader.
Yeah. And being, I think the valuable piece of advice here is like, listen, right? Like be open, be always kind of taking in information and processing that as a leader, as a boss, as a manager, that shows your people mm-hmm. that you're paying attention.
Yeah.
And one of the things we said early on in this conversation is that people want to know that they're doing meaningful work, and there's no better way to make them know that than by listening to them and acknowledging right. them and noticing them in those moments. So
one of the things that we wrote extensively about in the book is this notion that no one wants to work anymore, right? This is sort of this trope that gets thrown around a lot. One of my favorite little nuggets of research from all the work that we did on the book was we found a researcher who found instances of this exact phrase, no one wants to work, showing up in North American newspapers every year going back 120 years. So it's the most persistent generational trope in human history. And, you know, I hate to break it to anybody who's listening, but all the complaints you have about the younger workers who are coming in behind you, they are the same complaints that everybody had about you when you got here. And you know, this notion of how do you get more experienced managers and leaders in an organization to really connect with and more effectively lead younger workers, it's being able to step back and say, it's not that no one wants to work, it's that no one wants to work for me. So is that the same thing? It's probably not. Let me turn the mirror inward and start answering some more difficult questions about what needs to change either here or on my team or with my style if I notice that I have more turnover or more difficulty hiring on my team in particular. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Wow. Man, there are so many ways I could go with that. Part of me wants to say, put a piece of American cheese on your spaghetti and then pour the sauce over top. It'll change your life. But it has to be white American. That yellow processed stuff doesn't work at all. So you could take that if you want. But let me give you something maybe a little bit more meaningful as it relates to our topic today. And it's quite simply this. People tend to do a great job when they believe they have a great job. If you make your role as a leader entirely about understanding what leads that person to think, man, this is a great job, you will never struggle to fill positions or inspire people to the highest level of work. Sure. Well, you can learn more about me at my website, joemull.com. The podcast is called Boss Better Now. You can listen to that wherever you like to listen to podcasts. And the Employalty book is available wherever you like to get your books. Thank you, sir. I'm so glad I got to be with you today, Matt. Thanks again.
Car Wash the Podcast is your source for real stories and real business insights from the experts, both in and out of the car wash industry. Our show helps investors, owners, operators, and managers think about ways to enhance their business. Our podcast is a free on-demand audio program that provides information on the latest trends impacting the industry, tips from successful industry leaders, and inspiration for our listeners.